Now, I just want to remind the folks here, well, before I say anything, I guess I got to let you know who I am and why I am. I'm Stoney and I'm an alcoholic. And also a hell of a good guy. I got instructions here. I'm not too used to getting those kind of orders. It says, remind the attendees that special needs sections are exclusively for those who are in some way handicapped. Thank you. Now I'll ask for a moment of silence, please. Thank you. Now, there's a little, we're going to divert from the thing here, the schedule. We have a young lady here from the Mohawk Nation. She come and gave me her name, and I'm going to keep it. Her name is Sheila, and she's from the Mohawk Nation. She'd like to do a one-verse song, please. Sheila, if you'll come up and wherever you are. Do you need a symphony orchestra to back you up? Or?
No, that's okay. Hi, my name's Sheila. I'm an alcoholic and addict. Kika, I saw you yesterday. Good for you. I thought you were in D.C. So this is a Mohawk thank you song. I just wanted to sing this song for you because you're in my territory, and it's so good to be home. I'm from Vancouver. So just to thank you all for being here. Thank you for AA and sobriety. It's awesome. And I'll just sing it once and just think about the four directions just to keep it short. When Yahweh, when Yahweh, when Yahweh, when Yahweh, when Yahweh,
have a great conference. Thank you. Thank you, Sheila. Well, I guess we'll get to that point where the highlight of the meeting will be the experience these people have to share with you. And the first one I'll call on is a lady by the name of Tawny.
Okay. I'm Tawny. I'm an alcoholic. I'll stop now and listen. Although I don't know whether that's a good thing because when I'm alone with my thoughts, that gets me into trouble. So I don't think I'm going to follow along with that.
Go ahead.
I wish I had a script. It's quite an honor to share. This is awesome. This really is awesome. But I walked into the room and went, oh, my God, what am I doing? when we arrived this morning, we registered and they handed me a bag. And if I had been drinking, I would have needed four things in that bag. A sick bag, a cold face cloth, Visine, and a breath mint. So I'm not as far off. I'm not there anymore, thank God. And it's been quite a journey for me. Like I said, I'm Tawny, I'm an alcoholic. I have to remember that every day. Because what alcohol did to me in my life, it's quite a story. Now, I'm not going to share with you my drunkologue. Everybody, I think, has a drunkologue. We've bought the T-shirt and thrown up all over it a few times. And, I don't think it's much different for any of us. But I will tell you about what it was like what happened and what it's like now. And I think for myself, I am very genetically prone for this disease from day one. My biological family are all alcoholics. Now, I've since learned that that my son may not be an alcoholic just because I am, although just given the things that I know in my life and the family that I have and, you know, the things that have happened, yeah, I was prone from day one. I started drinking when I was 11 years old, and from the get-go, it was alcoholic drinking. I couldn't stop once I started. I was a blackout drinker. It took me to places that I never thought I'd go to in my life. I've done things that I'm not happy about, and I hurt a lot of people, not to mention myself. It was suggested to me in 1989 that I may have a drinking problem, and back then I didn't know what you were talking about. Well, no, you know, but, you know, I this and that, and, you know, I need to drink because of whatever. And it took me quite a few years to finally realize that I do have a problem. I know today that when I question my motives about anything I do in my life, back then when I drank, I had a lot of motives. You know, I'd sneak alcohol, and I just couldn't get enough. There was never enough booze for me. I've been arrested. I've been to the hospitals, short of the psych ward. You know, I've been to Homewood. I've been to treatment centers. And my disease tells me that I'm not an alcoholic, even though I've done all these things. And I guess I'm almost sober 5 years now. And this 5 years has been... Thank you. This 5 years has been quite a journey, and I was at a meeting a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about pity and feeling sorry for ourselves, and I think of all the reasons why I felt sorry for myself and I would drink, and I think of some of the things that have happened in sobriety, and I think, my God, I drank over such small things compared to some of the big things I've gone through in sobriety and managed to stay sober. I was adopted when I was 10 months old, and I grew up down here. I'm Aboriginal Inuit. My family is from northern Quebec. I know my birth mother and my birth father and a lot of my family up north. And it took me a long time to really accept who I am. I was angry at being different. You know, I thought I was different when I went to school as a kid. And I hated who I was. I had a lot of self-loathing. And that's a lot of reasons why I drank, I think. I like to isolate. I didn't ever want to associate with people. I like to hide out in my own little world. And I'm standing here shaking like a leaf because I never wanted to share. For me to get up and share was a very big thing. I could walk around and I can read a script like Stoney did. And he's got the easy part of this, and I asked him before we started if he could tell my story for me, but no, I'm sure there's people in the room that could do that just as well as I can, and, you know, I just don't remember it all. I relocated a lot of places because I wasn't comfortable in my skin wherever I was. I had a job where I traveled a lot up in northern Quebec, and it was a great way for me to just be a loner. I didn't want to be around or get close to anybody. And coming through this sobriety, it's different because I've allowed people into my life. Even though I don't like what you have to tell me sometimes, I need to know, you know, why I'm staying sober and why I don't need to drink. And I need to know about my behavior and my motives and the way I think. And Alcoholics Anonymous, you people understand that about me. When I thought I was so unique and so alone, Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, at the start slapped me upside the face for words, not literally. But, you know, you told me what my problem was, and taught me how I ticked inside as a human being. I haven't enjoyed sobriety totally, although I can say today I remember all the good times and the bad times. And that's new for me because I drank to forget. When it hurt so bad, I drank, and when when the hurt went away and I forgot what the pain was like, I drank. And I didn't know how to stay stopped. The things that I've done in sobriety, my husband is sitting up front, and I'd like to thank Ed for being here with me today. He said, well, just picture everybody in their underwear, and I said, no, thank you to that. That one might send me back out if I thought about it long enough. So I'll just focus on the post in front of me here. But the gifts that I've been given in sobriety, my first year I remember wanting to stay sober. I came around just to stay sober. And if I can make it to my chips, my 1 month, my 3 month, I was happy with that. In my second year, it was a test on how badly do I want to stay sober. Now I know to come to meetings. Now my second year, how badly do I want to stay? Because when I drank, I could get a year of sobriety or a year and a half or 6 months. I was a binge drinker, and a year and a half is all I could ever get. So in my second year of sobriety, it was a test for me, how do I stay here? I had to want to stay stopped, first of all. There had to be something inside of me that really genuinely wanted to be sober. After that, my third year and beyond is welcome to life, and life sucks sometimes. And I needed to learn how to cope and to manage the unhappy times in my life. And I was thinking on the way down, you know, we've had a lot of stresses in the last little while. And I haven't drank. I haven't had the thought to drink. The thoughts to drink come on occasion. I don't plan them to come. They just come up and I have a craving. The cravings don't last as long as they used to. And I know what to do with the craving when it does come. I either talk to somebody or I go to a meeting or I meditate or read AA literature. One of my favorite books is The Grapevine, because when I was traveling, it was my meeting in print. I understand in the north now, I haven't been up to northern Quebec, to Nunavik, in some time, but there are new avenues for recovery up there. And I remember the days when there weren't any meetings. You know, and when I was traveling and I needed one other alcoholic to talk to, it wasn't there. And you know, if I can make a difference to anybody anywhere, be for the people up north, because I've seen what alcohol and drugs and solvents and gas sniffing and all kinds of things, I've seen the devastation that dependence has in the north. And if I can make a difference anywhere, I would like to make it up north, because I've known people that have died because of this disease. I used to fly the medevacs around up north, and now up north, for anybody who doesn't know, there's no roads that join communities. It's all airplane or ship. And I used to fly the medevacs, and we'd fly so-and-so out after a drinking accident. We'd fly him out to the hospital, and a day or two later, that person may have been flown back to their home community in a box, in a coffin. And I've known people that have committed suicide. And I thank God in this program that I didn't have to go that far, that I could get off the dump truck any time that I wanted to, and I decided to get off before it became that bad for me. I remember a very good friend of mine up north. I worked for Air Inuit, Northern Quebec, and he lost his license because he's a chronic alcoholic. I was a pilot up north for Air Inuit, and I think of the gentleman every day because he couldn't stop. He did not know how to stop drinking, and he permanently lost his pilot's license because he couldn't stop. Hence, after that, he still couldn't stop, and he lost his job that the airline replaced for flying. So you people are good examples for me. I need to learn by what somebody has one day sobriety or 20 years sobriety. You all have something to teach me. And when I became teachable, you know, you hear that saying, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And I had to be totally and honestly ready to have you people help me. Because when I was fighting and kicking and screaming, my lessons became harder. And the more devastation it caused in my life. So I had to totally surrender and allow you people to help me heal. And now you people are helping me live a satisfying life, a healthier life. I'm able to make clearer choices today. My husband and I, we just had a baby boy. And he's... when we registered for this conference, my due date was today, July the 2nd. So I've got to do everything, you know, the complicated way. And he arrived on June the 1st, so he was a bit early. But if I had been drinking, we wouldn't have what we have today together. We bought a home and, you know, we did what normal people do, got a dog and then thought about children. And we've done all that, and we've done it together, and we've done it sober. And he'll be the first to tell you when I need to go to a meeting. There's a real freedom to being sober today. Even though when life sucks and it hurts, I don't have to drink to forget. I want to go through the painful moments of my life knowing that I didn't have to drink. And... I think with that, that's about all I have to say. And this is so awesome. This is something I'll carry with me for the rest of my life. And I'm going to have to run off to another meeting. I'm committed in the South Hall for another meeting. But I would like to thank you all very much for listening. And I wish everybody another 24 hours.
I have a little gift here for Tawny. Tawny, on behalf of our groups in Regina and individual members of AA, we offer you this little token of appreciation. You may, excuse me, you may be dismissed now. Thank you, Tawny. That was wonderful. Now, our next gentleman here is Phil, and he said he's known also as Waukee. So, Phil, if you want to come next on the program here, give us your story and tell us all about it.
I'm Phil. I am an alcoholic, first and foremost. Thank you. Today, I would like to humble myself. I apologize for speaking in front of my elders and some of the young people and most of all the old-timers in the program and the young ones. Like the lady said before, you know, the newcomer, the one that has 24 hours or less or one day, he keep me sober. So I want to thank everybody here and acknowledge the committee and special friends of mine, you know, that made this all possible. Ken, if he's out there, and Mr. Richardson, JSO, and my girlfriend Helen in the front seat here. She put up with me a lot, and you know, we're both in the programs, and it is the positive things, and sometimes we go against the grain on each other. So, you know, like she said, you know, you need a meeting, and we sometimes we don't know who needs the meeting. So, so I'm very grateful. I come from Rosebud, South Dakota, by way of St. Paul, Minnesota. 12 and a half years ago, well, I should start from the beginning. When my mom first pushed me out into this world, I came out kicking and screaming. I was very uncomfortable coming out to this world. So from then on, I learned to whine and moan and cry. And so, but today I'm here with the help of you guys, and especially the Creator, Wakantanka in my language, which means the higher power. You know, my sobriety date is October 22nd of 92. I always tell my friends that I can't take no credit for my sobriety. It's on the Creator and you guys, with your guys' direction and patience, that I'm able to be standing here alive, doing this thing called life. My first experience with a chemical was when I was 8 years old. I got high off of a can of lighter fluid, and my cousin, older cousins, they did those things. So I was standing in line like in a towel line with my little ball of cotton, and from then on, I think I know for a fact that I put my spirit to sleep, because, you know, this program talks about spirituality. And from 8 years on, my spirit was put to sleep. And I was more or less like a zombie, a robot that needed to move with alcohol, chemicals, drugs. So till most of my life, I grew up in a boarding school also, about 7 years. And I learned about who God was. And sometimes it was forced upon me. Today, I've made peace with that boarding school and who ran it. So I go to church on Sundays, and I also do my ceremonies. Back in 92 of October, I was pushed out of a VA hospital and told to do this thing called life, and I didn't want to come out. I was comfortable in there. My treatment and my aftercare, 4 months I stayed in there. They taught me how to work and how to live. And when the time was up, I got to the door. And I always tell people that I still have my claw marks and my skid marks at that VA hospital. You know, I didn't want to come out of there. But from then on, I got home, and everything was kind of the same. And my wife at the time didn't want to quit. And I remember them days vividly, because my 19-year-old daughter today, she's going to be a mother, and I'm going to be a grandfather twice in September. And, you know, I always tell people that, you know, hey, they pulled a double-barrel shotgun on me, you know. Instead of bullets, two little flags come out of there that says, Grandpa, Grandpa. And so I'm very happy and proud to be a grandpa. And, you know, in my culture, Wakanyeja means children, gifts from the Creator. You know, I look at myself as a caretaker of these little. I'm a single father of 7 children. I come from a family of 7. I got 4 brothers and 2 sisters, and now I have 3 sons and 4 daughters. So, and my 2 little babies are 7 and 8 years old, and they're of mixed blood. The mother sometimes they're half-breeds, but I kind of don't go with that word, so I just call my babies mixed bloods. And, you know, they live in 2 worlds, like me, you know. I do my traditional dancing, my ceremonies and everything. But I also go to church and I like to go DJ dancing, and you know, we went dancing the other night out by the stadium, and it was all, you know, fun. Elder spoke yesterday night at the drumming at the hospitality room and drumming, and you know, he said something that really struck me, and I think I heard it before, that you know, some of the old timers, they get set in their ways and they say that, you know, that's not AA with the drumming and dancing. And but the program of AA says that we have to make this program fun too, you know. And just this past 8 years, I started learning who I was as a Native American. Dancing, my uncle gave me an eagle feather. From then on, I started learning who I was and proud to be a Sioux Lakota Indian from South Dakota. But without this AA program, without the responsibility statement, I am nothing, you know. I'll be back under the bridge in no car bodies, drinking my hairspray and huffing my gasoline or spray paint. And, you know, that's where I came from. That's who I was. And I still am. I acknowledge it. The only thing that's different today is that I don't swing that right arm to do it. And maybe I'm going back and forth with this, but, you know, Elder told me that, you know, instead of writing notes down, you know, speak from the heart, not the mind. My own mind gets me in trouble a lot of times, so. my heart says today that, you know, I am responsible and that I need to suit up and show up. And, you know, with the steps of the program, my favorite steps are the third and the 11th step, which helped me understand that I am not God, I am not the Creator, I am not Wakantanka. That, you know, my life is, you know, guided by my belief systems and the program of AA. And this is a very, very awesome convention. This is my second convention. The last one was the International AA Convention and a little in Minneapolis, Minnesota. That's 2000. And a little story that I have to share and has to do with my being in the convention is that, you know, my ego, I eased God out. And back in 2000, I started a couple years before that, I started learning how to traditional powwow dance. And I was very excited of learning. And, you know, at a meeting when somebody mentioned the convention, they said, well, we could have a mini powwow there. And so they wrote to GSO office and they wrote back and they said, well, it's going to take the focus off of AA. So, you know, I got pissed right away and I got mad. I was going to quit AA and I was going to be this proud warrior and take on the world. But, as the higher power put it, elder woman, that there's a drop-in center for homeless and stuff that I volunteer sometimes, and she called me in the morning. She said, you have to come to the office, I need to talk to you. And I went there and she said, well, this Native American elder Ojibwe guy is going to carry the American Eagle Feather Staff into the convention, and we need a helper because the two ladies that were supposed to go with him, the ladies kind of, you know, had something else, and we need somebody to help him. And so without even thinking, she shook my hand and she gave me the passes, and I was standing there and I said, oh, no, hold on, I was going to quit AA there. So next thing you know, I'm walking down the aisle to the front row seat carrying the Eagle Feather Staff and all of his belongings, and he was walking in front of me. And that was my first experience with International Convention. And, you know, the higher power just took over and like coming out here, I was kind of short on funds. And, you know, my friend Helen there, my girlfriend Helen, you know, kept insisting, you know, we'll get over there. And, you know, I thought I had a felony in 77, and I kept saying, oh, I'll never get through the border, and, you know, making all these excuses to try to back out, and it came through. But, you know, today I'm very grateful that, you know, some of the things that you guys taught me in the program is, you know, that, you know, one thing that I've heard was, the first thing that I heard at a meeting was somebody said, keep coming back. And I turned around, I looked at him, I, you know, by suspicion, by nature, I just looked at him, why do you want me to come back? You know, up till today, nobody ever told me why I should be coming back, but, somebody says that at the door, and I'm thinking, maybe they got some sort of plan for me, and I could see what the plan is. I was thinking about, AA jokes and stuff, and this morning I kept asking my girlfriend, what should I, talk about? And one of the jokes that came into mind was this drunk at the bar, sitting there with all his cups, glasses, all of them empty except one, the first one. And it was still full. It was still full. So some guy walked by and asked him, how come you're not touching your first drink? And he kind of staggeredly looks at that guy and he said, because my sponsor told me that the first drink is going to get me drunk. And all his other drinks are empty and he's already half in a basket. So, but, I know some other jokes. I don't know if it was, one of my Ojibwe brothers told some jokes last night, and it really got me to thinking, a little bit of explanation. The Sioux Indians sometimes are known as, dog eaters. And the Ojibwe's, they're kind of known as, rabbit chokers. Their way of catching the rabbits, I found out recently, was to snare them, and when they're not dead, they just... And the Sioux Indians, they use puppies, not real adult dogs, but puppies in ceremony ways long time ago. So, I learned this someplace that, we get interracial, intertribal marriages and stuff going on, and, the question was, how do you know somebody's half Ojibwe and half Sioux Indian? That's a question, I guess, if somebody knows it. But the answer is that, he's out in the backyard choking his puppies. No disrespect to Shinobis around here or Dakota. But, little jokes like that I hear, and sometimes they might sound racial, but my belief is that once I come in that room, I shed my brown skin out there and I become an alcoholic or drug addict, and, I'm very proud to be an Indian, but I have to realize that AA is what helped me learn who I am. I am an Indian, but I am an alcoholic first. And no disrespect to my elders. But another joke that I heard, this one is my little bit part of my belief system, the four races of people on this earth. The white, the Caucasian, the red, the Native American, the yellow, the Asian, the black, and the African American. Those four brothers, they stood on a high skyscraper, and I think somebody might have heard this one. They stood on the skyscraper at a big city, and they were all sad because the smog and the pollution, and they stood way up there on a high building, and one of them was sad, and he said, well, the African guy said, I'm going to do this for my people. And he jumped off that skyscraper. And the Asian guy looked around, and he hit his chest. He said, I'm going to do this for my people. And he jumped off. And the Indian guy was standing there looking around, and he said, I'm going to do this for my people. And he looks around and looks at the Caucasian white guy, and he grabs him and he throws him off the ground. I apologize if I hurt anybody's feelings. But, I saw, I strongly believe that one day we will be of one color, you know, in my opinion. My two babies that are 7 and 8, they're half Caucasian and half Sioux Indian. So, you know, I tell the mom, they live in two worlds. They can be little ballerina dancers one weekend, and next weekend they put on their little powwow outfit and go powwow. And so, you know, I try to teach this with my children. And yesterday, the first was my 16-year-old son's birthday, and he's a Philip Jr. And, you know, I've never, 12 and a half years that I've been sober, I've never missed any of their birthdays. And that was hard, but I called my girlfriend, and, you know, kind enough to let me use her cell phone and call home and wish him a birthday. And he understood, because I told him, you know, son, you know, I have to be here, over here. If I'm not sober, I'm not going to be there for you guys. And that's Elder from New York. He's still my sponsor, and he's 20-some years sober. And he told me that story one day. He told it to a lot of people, and he told about, you know, staying sober for somebody else. And the program teaches us not to stay sober for somebody else. But the thing that he said was really made sense was on one day he was so out of it that he didn't give a shit about, excuse my language, he didn't care about himself, so he decides to get drunk, and he thought about his wife and his loved one, and he said for that day he stayed sober for his wife, and it pulled him through that day, because, you know, at that point he didn't care about anything about himself. And so that's where my support system is with my 6 children that I'm raising right now. And the oldest one is 19, and she's going to be a mom, but I still look at her as my baby, you know, because the mom is still out there someplace, and I pray for her every day. And, you know, I pray for the two babies' mom, too, and she's maybe doing something out there. But I don't hold it against them. I pray for them instead in the morning. You know, today's society, everything is, you know, clock and watch, and we got to do this, and we got to do it in the morning. And I heard this at a meeting, too, and, you know, maybe it's not the right way, but, you know, it kind of made little sense, because in the mornings we're rushing here and there and trying to get going. And some guy said, in the morning, he just said, please, you know, look up in the sky and says, please, get me sober today. And at nighttime, his head hit the pillow, and he said, thank you. And those were simple little short prayer words that I keep in mind. Today, I burned sage in the morning, and we were at the hospitality room, and we talked about burning sage, and they didn't allow us, but I have to accept society's rules today, and, you know, I can't get mad over it, or, you know, hold a grudge, or, you know, so today I'm very grateful to be in front of, you know, the whole Toronto, and the Providence, or, you know, first time ever I've been in Canada. And first time I spoke in front of an awesome crowd as this. And the elder that carried the American Eagle Feather Staff in, you know, I was at that one of those in Minneapolis in 2000. And the elder walked over to the other world. But, you know, I still hold that in my heart. And last night was another awesome ordeal. And, you know, it brought pride to my heart, but it put tears in my eyes also because of happiness. That, you know, we're as a race being acknowledged through this AA program. Without AA, I don't know where I'll be. One little story that I keep in mind is that my 19-year-old daughter, when she was 7 years old, I was hugging a toilet bowl and crawling into my bed. And she came in there with her little piggy bank, plastic Coke bottle piggy bank, and she said, Daddy, you sick, go fix yourself. And alcoholic me, I poured out that little piggy bank, and I counted $1 or something out, and I went to the grocery store and bought a can of hairspray and mixed it up and got drunk. And I went home and I terrorized the family. And I seen my little daughter crawl under the bed. And I still hold that in my mind, because I don't ever want to become that animal again. terrorizing my little kids. And today, with the help of everybody here, I'm able to do that. I want to really give thanks to everybody, especially the panel that has been asking. Today I stand here with very much gratitude. I use the word mitakueo yasi, which means all my relations, even the plants, the birds, the creepy crawlers in the sky, and the grandmother earth, and you people out here. I look at spirits, souls. Elder told me, don't use that word if you do not believe it in your heart, that everybody is your brother, even though the things that are out there on this world. So with that word, I want to wish everybody a happy 24 hours and a great convention. So with that, I'll close. Mutako ayase.
Thank you, Phil. These are wonderful words. Again, from the same people in Regina and the groups, to you, Phil, we offer this medallion of AA.
Hey, Phil. Phil, where'd you go? Don't run away. Hey!
Get back here.
Oh, here you are. There you are, Phil.
Thank you, my friend. And there you have it from Phil. Our next speaker is going to be Wayne from Midland, Ontario. Wayne?
I'd like to thank the committee, my chairperson, the people behind the scenes for this great gathering. My name is Wayne Mixamong. I'm an alcoholic. I just love the way I say that today. I'm an alcoholic. There was a time I could not. But in time, I became, and I loved to be an alcoholic. It was a time I despised it. Before I get started here, I'd like to thank, all I want to say is our First Nation would like to welcome and thank all nations that are here today, from the north, from the south, from the east, from the west. This is what our First Nation wants to do to you people. You have traveled many, many miles to be here today. Remember going up on a reserve, like our second speaker said, they're talking about rabbits and what else was that other animal? Rabbits and dogs. Well, you're going to get a wing deer today. Remember living on a reservation, I've always had engine trouble, you know. Always, boy, did my mods just move then, you know, running away, you know. It was to become a pattern in my drinking. I started drinking, I guess I'm going to take a wild guess here, at 17. I remember looking up to the older people on the res. They were taller and bigger and wider than me. I've always been small, you know. So I remember looking at them and I fantasized, maybe someday I too will grow up to be a man. So I'm looking at them, you know, they're passing a bottle of wine, 671B, a bottle of goof, cheap bottle of wine. And I remember looking at them, maybe too, all will drink like that. And you always get one drunk, you know, you always wipes the bottle, you know, And that same person probably never brushed or washed their teeth in 6 months, you know. And that person's worried about germs, you know, like. I look at that bottle, give me that damn thing. No. Remember drinking, holy gee. I'm one of these drunks that grows, okay? I grow about a half an inch, you know, like. See, when I drink, when I pick up a bottle of goop or a drink, I change automatically. Automatically, it takes away the shame, the anger, the pain. That's the way I drink. When I drink, I can't stop. I want to drink till it's all gone or I'm down. That's the way I drink. Once I start, I cannot stop. And drinking to me, it was exciting, it was fun, and I used to see women and men and their girlfriends and wives, and I too, being lonely when I was drinking, I too wanted one of those. But in my case, I wanted to borrow yours. Don't do that. Yeah. And I'm one of these drunks that travels a lot when I go to the hotels. You know, you're drunk in India, you know. I go every weekend, you know. Every weekend I've been hospitalized 4 different times. I had my nose broken, my ribs. I got those big arms, you know, because when I drink, I get false courage. I try and act tough. I puff up, you know, just like John Wayne, you know, like. I'm big, you know, and my arms get bigger, and, you know, I try and act tough, I try and act smart, and I'm showing off. I think I can drink better than you. That's the way I think. And when I start drinking, right automatically, if somebody offers me drink, I start to worry, are we going to run out, are we going to have enough? And that's the way I think when I start drinking. There's no satisfaction because I want to drink to get drunk. Needless to say, I used to hitchhike all over the place when I was drunk. I was drunk in Collingwood and there was a bar there and I was 105 pounds soaking wet and they thought I was one of the boat people. Oh, yeah. So I started telling them I was from Cambodia, from the killing fields of, you know, Saigon or something like that, just to be able to be accepted, you know, so I could drink with these people, you know. I don't want to get cut off. I go to the washroom. I go and wash my face nice, and next thing you know, I look in the mirror. I'm tall, dark, and handsome, you know. Maybe even cute, you know, like, yeah, I'm a fantasizer, I'm a dreamer, and this is what alcohol was doing to me. I remember where I come from, it freezes, I live on an island in the wintertime, and it was freezing over, so I was going to go and show those Indians how to drink. I'm a big shot now, because I really think I'm something when I'm drinking. I got me a case of Molson X, and I go to catch my ride on the ice. I fell through the ice with my case of beer. I crawled out and I panicked. How many bottles did I lose? You know, how many bottles? You know, it was so nice to see young people here today, because I was like that young, girl from way up north there, up in the Nubik. I drank and I did substitutes. I sniffed gasoline, rubbing alcohol. I drank aftershave and lotion. I used to come and get drunk here in Toronto. I ended up in Hyde Park and Allen Gardens, bumming for money and cigarettes, hitchhiking back to Midland just to try and make it back. They used to always tell me I had cousins by the dozens when I was drinking. Come on down to the Big Smoke, we'll show you around. All I seen was the silver dollar, the holiday, the paddock, you know. All these sleazy bars, eh? I ain't got no money. You know? And I started going to jail. I got picked up for being drunk. And then I had such a resentment with the cops, I wanted to burn the jail down. But I'm just a little bit backwards. I was inside when I was... Anytime I had a problem, I would blame somebody, and I would put myself down. I used to hear them and say, "You're no good, you're stupid, you're dumb, you're nothing but a drunk." All my life, I've had to live with racism. All my life, I've been put down, told I was dumb and stupid. All my life, that's all I heard. You're sick, you're crazy. So that's where I became. That's what I did. On the reserve. I tried many times to stop drinking on my own. I went to church drunk. I tried the Salvation Army. I even tried binge drinking. That only lasted maybe 2 weeks or something like that. No. I just... Maybe I should drink myself to death. Maybe I should drink myself to death. Oh, no, Wayne. That would kill good mother. That would kill good mother. Just, I am too scared to go on living like this. And I am too scared to die. And I used to curse God and blame God for every rotten thing that happened to me. Just, and I didn't know I was crying out for help. I said, "Oh, God, help me. I had enough of this bad life." I asked to be committed in Penetang at the psychiatric hospital. It was the longest ride I've ever had in my life. And you people, the people that go out to institutions to carry the message to people like me. I remember my drinking buddies. I'm all alone. I'm locked up. It was on Mother's Day. Mother's Day is very special to me because my mom found out I was in Penetang and she thought I was at Oak Ridge for the criminally insane. She said, "My baby's gone too far." She says, I remember them laughing at me when I was at the Brebeuf building. They went, my brother and sister went to the wrong place. But they brought me out. My mom says that we didn't know what you were going to look like. If you were going to be in shackles or in a straitjacket. I remember when I was in Penetang, they used to escort me to see the psychiatrist. Yeah, see, they said, "This guy will never make it." You people, you're the reason why I'm here. I walked out of there 25 years ago, a free man. A free man. They said, "Wayne, you got no other place to go." When I was in there, and you came there carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to people like me. Says, "You got to find God, Wayne." So I woke up 7 o'clock in the morning and I turned on the TV. Maybe I should try and find God. I didn't want nobody to see me, okay, you know. The other patients, you know. They're just a little disturbed. You know, I didn't want to disturb them, you know. I'm always the last one to realize that, you know. I have a problem. So I turn on the TV. Holy jeez. I seen the prettiest woman, the cutest woman I've seen all my life. I turned the TV on and the channel was PTL. This little lady, she had 2 pounds of makeup on. She had little hooters on, little mini skirt, you know. I said, Tammy Baker. Oh, where have you been all my life? You know, like... My medication was running a little high, you know, like... Yeah. Oh, did you? It says, come on back, Wayne, we love ya. I used to sit here all alone at the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. All alone. What am I doing here? I thank God for the old timers. I wanted to impress you people one Friday night in Penetang, my home group. I went out and bought me a brand new shirt, brand new pants, new shoes. All my life, I've had hand-me-down clothes under reserve, just like I wanted to look like a big shot in AA. All my life, I wanted that white-collared, stiff white shirt, you know. I used to see them with suits and ties. So I went and got me that stiff collar. I walk around my home group with a kink. My little brother came in the doors of AA with me that night. He noticed, what's wrong with you, Wayne? And he spotted it. He says, Wayne, you forgot to take the cardboard out. He said, Wayne, you're so stupid. You're so stupid. See, I'm starting to laugh in AA. I'm starting to like being sober. See, Wayne, we could bring you out of the bush, but we can't take the bush out of you. You're a bush Indian, you know. Many benefits have happened to me. This is what Alcoholics Anonymous has done to me, because time is limited. My little brother, Austin, followed us, the native traditions. He's sober over 24 years of continued sobriety. I got my brother, Fudd. He's sober about 17 years. I got a sister, Marilyn. She's been sober 20 years and followed the church, you know. 20 years. And I got another brother. He's sober 7. Yeah. I got another sister, Bev. We created a monster. She wants to fight the guys in AA. I'm telling you. Stubbornness runs in my family. I was told to be nice to the people here in Toronto. It says, they're sensitive here, Wayne, so go easy on them, you know. In closing, I got about 5 minutes, and I just want to wrap it up. It says, I'm one of the most fortunate persons in Alcoholics Anonymous. You're the reason why I'm here. You people gave me a gift to reach out to maybe just that one person in the audience. You don't have to become like me. You don't have to end up like me. And shame and no respect. My mother, before she died on my fifth year medallion, I lost my job. She used to give me her pension check, disability. So I come to the conferences in Toronto. I used to hitchhike in the wintertime and walk on the ice 3 miles to come to your AA meetings. What are you prepared to do to stay sober? The magic answer. What is it? One day at a time. Back then, we talked about staying sober. We talked about staying sober one day at a time. We didn't talk about going out or relapsing and playing games. This is life or death. This is life or death. To be able to speak at anniversaries and conferences all over the United States and Canada, you gave me a gift. This is what AA has taught me. It's better to love than be loved. It's better to forgive than be forgiven. It's better to understand than rather to be understood. This is what AA, I don't follow the program. I have Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 steps and the traditions and the concepts. There's a thing I heard a long, long time ago from a real famous Indian, Nez Perce tribe, I think it is. He said, I am tired and my heart is sad and I will fight no more forever with you people. Thank you.
Thank you, Wayne. Another token that's been offered to the speakers here. Wayne, on behalf of the same people that I mentioned before, we offer this little token of appreciation made by an Indian lady from the Standing Buffalo Indian Reserve. Thanks to Darlene. Back to the script. Well, you got your time in. Have to go by the clock. Now, just in closing, I'd like to share a bit of my story. Most of it was shared by the speakers here, and I'll just add a little bit of mine. First of all, I'd like to acknowledge stand up, please, dear. Yeah. Both of you, my wife and daughter. Ladies and gentlemen, what I've heard here, what I've seen, what I've felt, has all been awesome. To see your people here that I didn't know 46 years ago, that I'd never be around to see this happen. Thank God, thank AA and your people. You know, they were talking about their favorite drinks, eh? I had mine too. I had a drink there they called Block and Tackle. Man, that was good. I'd have a drink of that, I'd walk a block and tackle anybody. Yeah. They mentioned a little bit about our traditions as Indian people. I remember on one of my hunting trips out in the bush with my uncles. And of course, when you're through the bush, you know, you're watching and listening and going quietly. My uncle says to me, son, he says, there's bears in this bush. Is that right? So on my way, I go chugging through the bushes, looking and listening. All at once, I see a bear standing up there, you know, paws up in the air, sniffing. I stood quietly. He said, don't be afraid, son. I walked on. By God, I looked behind me and hear something. Here this bear's behind me. He's going to get me. So I'm trying to hurry. I keep looking back. And as I'm going through the bushes, going through the path, there's a little tree lying across the path. Over I go. Oh, I've had it. The bear's going to get me. Down I go. I've had it. It comes to mind. Prayer and meditation. I'm praying there and all at once the bear joins me. I said, thank you, Mr. Bear, for joining me in prayer. Oh, shut up, he says. I'm saying grace. So as we walk the path of AA, we have these experiences. They talk about strength, hope, and all that, and they happen in many ways. Because we're given and blessed with the gifts of what the Great Spirit has offered us. Not what comes from the book, but what comes from the heart. We look to Him every day, from morning till night, and we say thank you. And when those things happen, we get that peace that He offers us. And when we're in turmoil, we think of the not only AA, but we do our step 10. We continue to take that personal inventory. And when we are wrong, we promptly admit it. It took me a long time to get to where I am in AA, which wasn't the path of complete serenity. Some insanity set in once in a while, you know. However, because of the gatherings that have happened in my life and you people coming to them, I started the first convention as I can maybe refer to our power trails. Our convention trails started with my oldest daughter here. She was just a baby in 1970. I'm giving you away my, your birthday, my girl. I'm sorry, sir. Oh, correction, 75. If I don't do that, I'll never hear the end of it. We'll have to go to court for it. Which reminds me, you know, previous to getting here, I had a court appearance, see, for speeding of all things. And I'm slow as a snail and even slower. By God, you know, if good things don't happen, I go to the courthouse on Wednesday, get there early, sit there and walk into the courthouse, nobody around except the judge and the lady that takes the recordings. I walked in and he said, Story, he said, what the heck you doing here? Oh, I said, I talked to him just like he wasn't even a judge. I said, I got a letter from you guys saying that I'm supposed to come and see you to tell you that I love you. I said, yeah, I said, I was supposed to be speeding in this town. And don't you have sight to tell us how fast to go? And I was doing that. So he looked at the papers and he said, you know, you should have been told you weren't even supposed to be here. And that was in March? Yeah. So you got to check with my advisor here. Anyway, I looked heavenly and I said, thank you, Lord. Which reminds me of a meeting I was going to one time. And you know how it is when you want to be on time at these meetings, eh, once in a while. And you're slow sometimes and you're late. I'm hurrying to this meeting, get to the church and there's steps there, eh? And I'm running up the steps, kick the last one, fall over, look heavenly. Looked around, nobody looked at me. I said, dear Lord, I know I'm late. Please don't push. Oh, we got lots of time. Well, folks, I've enjoyed your company, and I'm glad that the speakers gave us the message that they did. And I wish we could hear from more of you. But I share with all of you, wherever we are, AA is there. Wherever we go, worldwide, and it was proven last night, the 91 flags that come before us at the gathering, to be in that stadium and other stadiums, was awesome, is awesome. I know when I went in there last night, I looked around. I thought some of the Argonaut agents would be there wanting me to sign a contract. I know they have all their different cornerbacks, running backs, quarterbacks, and all those other backs. Because I didn't want to sign on the line where it says, you play all the way back. Anyway, folks, I thank you for being here. And we'll close now. Gotta go back to the script again. Better take my watch, too. It might go in the hawk shop. It says, thank all the speakers, and I think I've done that about a dozen times. Thank you again. We'll close with the Lord's Prayer, please, and the Serenity Prayer. Thank you. our Father. Serenity prayer, please. God, accept the things I cannot change, change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Thank you.